Support for this public radio podcast comes from Mellon Financial Corporation, helping financially successful individuals and families protect and maximize their assets through the practice of wealth management. Mellon.com. And by A.G. Edwards, caring for nest eggs for more than 120 years with a commitment to provide objective financial advice. Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, dedicated to a prudent approach to investing. Produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Let me give you a hypothetical. If this economy was headed into a recession, would oil prices be hitting records? It happened today. Here's another one. If people had confidence in the economy, would the dollar be hitting record lows? Again, happened today. And the weirdest thing of all, the stock market barely budged. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Angie's List, providing thousands of reports on local service companies. These reports come directly from the experiences of the members themselves. Angie'sList.com. And by Vanguard, offering investments designed to help individuals and institutions reach their long-term financial goals. 1-888-VANGUARD.
From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Great to have you with us on this 12th of September. It's a Wednesday today. I know there is a reading the tea leaves aspect to all of this, but a quick look around the commodities markets today offers some very different and all equally reasonable interpretations of the health of the American economy. Oil, as I mentioned, hit a record high today, not adjusted for inflation, mind you. Also not traditionally a sign of a looming recession. Gold is somewhere north of $710 an ounce. That's a 16-month high for the safest of safe havens. And then there's the dollar, as much a commodity as anything else out there. The greenback fell to an all-time low against the euro today, $1.39 to the single currency, if you're the type who prefers specifics, mostly on speculation that the Federal Reserve is going to cut interest rates, which it may well do when it meets next Tuesday. But Marketplace's Stephen Beard reports now from London. Those cuts may have to be steeper than anybody expected.
The dollar has been declining all year, but this week the slide accelerated after Friday's payroll figures. It appeared that the sinking real estate market is taking jobs down with it, and that, says currency fund manager Neil McKinnon, is further undermining the greenback.
When we're in a situation where economic growth is slowing, as it is in the US economy, where there seems to be a growing risk of a recession, the markets start to discount lower interest rates.
Lower rates make the dollar a less attractive investment. Currency traders in London say the greenback could look even less appealing next week. The Fed could cut rates by half of 1% to stave off recession. And the prospect of a recession loomed a bit larger today because of oil. Crude briefly touched a record price of $80 a barrel, and this in spite of OPEC's decision to increase production. The problem for the US, says analyst Michael Hughes, is that demand for oil is still soaring in countries like China and India.
The demand for oil from the emerging economies has now overtaken the demand for oil from the developed economies, and hence people are forecasting oil prices of over $90.
Caught between the rising price of oil and a slowing economy, the US faces a painful winter, say the analysts, and the US dollar could face a further pummeling in the currency markets. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Continuing with the theme of a global economy, Mattel CEO Bob Eckert promised today to do more to make sure his company's toys are safe. He also admitted his mistakes in not keeping a closer eye on Mattel's Chinese subcontractors. Eckert was on Capitol Hill today alongside the chairman of the Consumer Product Safety Commission. The two were speaking as Chinese regulators were promising to shape up as well. Chris Burns, an independent toy analyst. Chris, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Chris, today China's product safety chief said by Christmas Chinese toys will be safer, more appealing. Are you buying that?
Absolutely. I think we've seen China's ability to adapt to changing market conditions, to move quickly throughout its system. Ultimately, we're going to see, you know, a manufacturing partner in China that's actually going to be stronger, and there's going to be more knowledge, more oversight moving ahead.
Is this Christmas really even in play as far as fixing these things goes?
No. Moving forward, all of the toys that will be sold in the U.S. this Christmas are either in stores or in the process of getting to stores. The good news out of that is people were aware of these recalls back in June. They started testing toys that were coming into the marketplace. So I think this is going to be one of the safest Christmases ever in terms of the amount of vigilance that's being applied to toys this year.
Am I going to have to pay $5.99 now for a Thomas the Tank Engine toy instead of $4.99 3 months ago?
Well, unknown. But evidently, of course, there's going to be some increase in cost as we go along. But that's natural. Materials are up. Shipping is up. There's a lot of things that are more expensive now. So this may be one small component in an incremental price increase.
All right. So let me try to pin you down here for a second. Consumers are going to pay a little bit more. Toy makers, for example, Mattel, are going to suffer in terms of reputation and share price. What about the Chinese?
Well, I think that the Chinese will continue to grow, and I think if they can demonstrate their ability to respond to the changing market as they've done in areas like licensing and character licensing, I think it's going to be strong, and I think the entire network of Mattel and the Chinese working together will only get stronger.
Is there going to be pain though before we get there?
Is there going to be pain? There may be. There's always growing pains in learning new systems, but I think that the U.S. manufacturers who contract with these Chinese manufacturers have expressed their consistent commitment to doing it, so I think everybody's going to have to grow together to adapt to a changing environment.
Chris Byrne is an independent toy analyst. He's also a contributing editor at Toy Wishes magazine. Chris, thanks a lot for your time.
Thank you.
Oil at $80 can only mean one thing, as we all know, you and me paying more at the pump before too long. But Marketplace's Amy Scott reports there may be a benefit to that.
Higher gas prices could deflate a ballooning public health problem in this country, obesity. At least that's what one Washington University PhD student says. Charles Cordemunch looked at 2 decades' worth of government health surveys. He found that when gas prices rose, people got more exercise, they also ate out less often, and they lost weight.
We're all miserable about the higher gas prices, but hey, here's a little silver lining.
Cordemunch predicts a dollar increase in gas prices today could reduce U.S. obesity by 15% in 5 years. Dan Sperling with the Institute of Transportation Studies at UC Davis isn't so sure.
I'd say it's highly unlikely, if not totally wrong.
Sperling's research shows that drivers barely change their behavior when prices rise.
Most people respond to higher gasoline prices by buying more fuel-efficient vehicles, not by driving less.
But those cars tend to be smaller. Sperling says a little less wiggle room behind the wheel could inspire people to shed a few pounds. In New York, I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
Rising oil and a sinking dollar did absolutely nothing for Wall Street today, either up or down. As long as we're on the markets, there were some developments today at the New York Stock Exchange, technically the for-profit company known as NYSE Euronext. Officials announced a new fee structure in the hopes of pulling market share away from the NASDAQ. Costs for electronic trading will be lower now. And the big board is getting smaller. It's consolidating its floor operations into 2 rooms at the corner of Wall Street and Broad. Used to be as many as 4. That is, more trades happen with the click of a mouse. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. Let's suppose you shop at Walmart. Even if you don't, work with me here for a second. Why do you shop there? Always low prices, right? That's been the company's tagline for 19 years. But our New York Bureau Chief Jill Barshay reports Walmart's decided it's time for something new.
Walmart's plastic bags, receipts, and TV ads now say, save money, live better. If you think you've heard something like that before, you're not going crazy. Edward Weller is a Walmart analyst at ThinkEquity Partners. He says Walmart has a history of stealing good ideas from competitors.
From the point of view of content and rhythm, it is surprisingly like the Target slogan, which is expect more, pay less.
Howard Davidowitz runs a retail consulting firm in New York. He says the new motto is designed to appeal to the growing sophistication of Walmart's core customers.
Low prices is good, but you don't have the living better in it. Which shows, and their advertising will focus on the living better, what you can do with the money.
Walmart is having a hard time boosting revenue at its stores because competitors are cutting prices too. Weller at Think Equity Partners says now Walmart wants to raise sales by selling more than just low-priced staples to its middle-class customers.
But as Walmart introduces higher quality, more fashionable, more rapidly changing apparel and housewares, they will be introducing things with more cost in them, and they will be higher priced.
It's easy to be skeptical about corporate ad campaigns. Walmart's may be the most honest out there. If the company really wants to sell more upscale goods, then it won't be able to offer always low prices all the time. In New York, I'm Jill Barshay for Marketplace.
It's not Harry Potter, to be sure, but odds are O.J. Simpson's new book, If I Did It, is going to fly off the shelves when it's released later this week. If you thought the project had been abandoned in the face of public outrage, it had. Now, one of the leaders of that protest will be profiting from the book instead. Tim Rutten's the media columnist for the Los Angeles Times. Tim, good to see you again.
Glad to be here.
First question that just leaps to my mind about this book is, why is it even being published at all?
Well, there's a new rule of media thermodynamics, which is that certain kinds of stories like Anna Nicole Smith or Britney Spears, they can neither be created nor destroyed. They just live forever. And O.J. is one of those stories.
Fred Goldman, the father of Ron Goldman, stood side by side with Denise Brown, the sister of Nicole Brown Simpson, when this book first surfaced as an O.J. Effort, and denounced its publication. And now here we have Fred basically himself getting this book out?
Yes, we do, because one of the things that's characteristic of this period in the media is that all these contentious issues that divide us, race and class, homicide, domestic violence, they all meet in one place, and that's the marketplace. And this has all become about money. As you may recall, even though O.J. Simpson was acquitted of the criminal charges, he subsequently lost a wrongful death action, which the Brown and Goldman families brought against him, and was assessed a judgment of $33.5 million. Well, Mr. Goldman and the Browns have never been able to collect that judgment because O.J. Simpson moved to a more congenial state, Florida. And they've been – the Goldmans at least have been pursuing him ever since. And so he has an asset now in this unpublished manuscript. The Goldmans went into court, and in what seems to us to be an unprecedented event, as far as any of us can determine, nobody has ever seized an unpublished manuscript to satisfy a civil judgment in America, certainly not in the history of American publishing.
Who's doing the actual publishing of the book? It's not going to be Scribner's or Alfred.
Oh, no. This gets curiouser and curiouser. You may recall that the book was initially with HarperCollins. They pulped first printing of 400,000 copies. Pulped means they destroyed it and said they wouldn't have anything to do with the book. They gave it back to Mr. Simpson. Goldman sued. Now, they have this book, and they found – they shopped it around New York, and nobody wanted to touch it. So they finally found a curious kind of publishing house, which is new in our vista, and that's – it's called a joint venture publishing house. It's basically somewhere between a normal publishing house and what we used to call a vanity press. This one is called Beaufort Books. It belongs to a man named Eric Campbellman, who appears to be its only employee. They outsource everything. And basically, they're a distribution company.
All right. So they found this this press that's going to put this book out. Who's going to distribute? I mean, how's it going to sell?
Well, that's an interesting thing because Barnes & Noble, which is the, you know, the 800-pound gorilla in the book sales business, announced that they wouldn't put this book on their store shelves, but they would sell it online.
Huh.
Advance orders were such that it quickly became their best-selling advanced order book. And they have subsequently announced they will, in fact, put it on the shelves. Beaufort Press and the Goldmans have announced that they've kicked up the initial press run to 150,000 copies. And as of today, the book was 133rd on Amazon.
And so it's working, really, for Fred Goldman.
It absolutely is. And he's going to make a lot of money and make a lot of money off something that, with all respect to his family and to Mr. Goldman, is going to look to a lot of people like the commoditization of grief.
Tim Rutten writes the Regarding Media column for the Los Angeles Times. Tim, thanks for coming in.
I'm glad to be here.
Coming up, help for the hungry in Zimbabwe.
If you want to guarantee that your family has something to eat, it's better to send the food than to send money.
But first, let's do the numbers. Stocks slipped today as oil busted through $80 a barrel and the dollar continued to slide. The Dow Industrials was down 0.1%, 16 points at 13,291. The NASDAQ fell 0.2%, 5 points to close at 2592. The S&P 500 was flat, ended the day where it started pretty much at 1471. Oil and natural gas explorer Interoil shares pumped up 8% as oil prices rose. Shares of AmeriCredit popped up nearly 10% today after the car lender said it found buyers for some of its loans amid the tight credit market. McDonald's chewed off 1%, even though it boosted its annual dividend by half today. Overseas, Britain's FTSE traded up 0.4%. Germany's DAX rose 0.2%. France's CAC 40, CAC 40, if you will, traded up 0.5%. Japan's Nikkei fell 0.5%. That is Prime Minister Shinzo Abe resigned. Bonds back home traded up. The yield on the 10-year T-note slipped to 4.4%. And you are listening to Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, managing money since 1937 with a focus on consistent results over the long term. Putnam Investments, a prudent approach to investing. By the American Public Transportation Association, representing America's public transportation industry, delivering 10 billion riders annually and working for an energy-independent America. Publictransportation.org. And by Bank of America. Through community outreach, philanthropic giving, and environmental efforts, finding opportunity and embracing it. Bank of America. Bank of Opportunity. Bankofamerica.com. Want to know what's in the works at Marketplace? How about getting the latest news and features in an email? Sign up for the Marketplace Midday Update. It will keep you up to date on the day's business news and let you know what to expect on our next program. Go to marketplace.org and click on the newsletter link on the right.
From the Marketplace Datebook, here's a glance at what's coming up Thursday. In Washington, the Treasury Department releases the August federal budget report. The Muslim fasting month of Ramadan begins in Saudi Arabia and most Mideast countries. And in Italy, consumer groups are encouraging shoppers to abstain from purchasing pasta for one day. It's not an effort to cut out carbs, but rather a protest against the rising price of the national dish. I'm Michelle Phillippe.
This is Marketplace from American Public Media. I'm Kai Rizdal. Let me bring it back up to the top of the program for a second and all the speculation about whether or not the Fed's going to cut interest rates come next Tuesday. There is a related idea that goes along with that, that if the Fed does cut, it's somehow rewarding speculators who did dangerous and sometimes stupid things with their money. Commentator David Frum says we shouldn't be too quick to judge.
In economics and in politics, we tend to give our leaders too much credit for the good things that do happen, and too little credit for the bad things that don't. This bias is not just unfair. It can dangerously skew decision-making. If we're not careful, in fact, it may just skew today's mortgage crisis into tomorrow's financial panic. To understand, let's step backward a decade. The financial markets of emerging Asian economies like Indonesia collapsed in the summer of 1997. The downturn in Asia cut global demand for oil and other commodities. Lower oil prices wrecked the finances of oil-exporting Russia, and a year later, the Russian government defaulted on its bonds. The ensuing turmoil pushed a huge U.S. hedge fund, Long-Term Capital Management, to the brink of insolvency. In September 1998, the Federal Reserve Bank of New York negotiated a rescue package for the hedge fund. This decision was much criticized for encouraging reckless investor behavior, but regulators did probably avert a global financial crisis. In this century, the recklessness shifted from emerging markets to the U.S. mortgage market. Many lenders put money where they had no business putting it. And today again, the world stands on the edge of a financial crisis. This one, vastly more dangerous than that of a decade ago, because the amounts of money at stake are so much greater. Yet Washington hesitates to act. Treasury Secretary Henry Paulson and new Fed Chairman Ben Bernanke remember the criticism of their supposedly over-interventionist predecessors, Bob Rubin and Alan Greenspan. They have no way of measuring that criticism against the criticism that would have rained down if Rubin and Greenspan had not acted and things had gone very badly wrong. Policymakers seem to remember long-term capital management as an example of what not to do. And so they are not doing it, risking perils greater than most of us yet understand.
David Frum is a resident scholar at the American Enterprise Institute. We'd love to hear what you think. Send us your comments online. Our website is marketplace.org. All you have to do is click on that link that says contact. Inflation's the big bugaboo for Ben Bernanke and the U.S. Federal Reserve. But if you put it into context for a second, year-over-year price increases of, what, 2 or 3% don't really seem that bad. Inflation's higher in other countries, certainly. Nowhere more so, though, than in Zimbabwe. The official rate, according to the government of President Robert Mugabe, is 7,000% year-over-year. It's maybe 2 or 3 times that in actual practice. We're going to try today to understand what that really means. Gretchen Wilson first visited Zimbabwe for Marketplace during the elections in 2005. She follows the country closely for us, and we asked her earlier today what conditions are like there now.
Food is the biggest issue. Even in the wealthiest areas of the capital, Harare, grocery stores are virtually empty. You walk in and there's no meat in the meat section, no bread in the bakery section. It's like an apocalyptic novel or something. It's really depressing. And it's not just food. Gasoline is also really difficult to come by, and that means fewer cars on the road, and some businesses have really come to a standstill.
Back it up for me a minute, Gretchen, and tell us how this inflation got started and how it's gotten so out of control.
Well, it depends on who you believe. Mugabe says it's greedy capitalist merchants who exploit the Zimbabwean people with really high markups on goods. But inflation was really sparked by a rapid increase in the country's money supply. The economy really screeched to a halt in the last 7 years, and that's meant a loss in tax revenue and a pullout of international investors. So the Reserve Bank has been printing money just to help pay the government's bills. And it's a cycle that's continued as inflation has spiraled higher. In July, as you know, the annual inflation was officially at more than 7,000%, but experts expect it really to be a lot higher than that, at least 3 times that.
So what are the choices that the average Zimbabwean has? They can stay and try to live, or I suppose they could try to leave, right?
Well, until recently, the political elite had figured out a way to navigate the system, basically using foreign currency to buy wads of Zimbabwean dollars. But what's happened recently is that in the past few months, no matter how much money you have, the shops probably don't have what you want to buy. And it's really especially worse for average Zimbabweans, 80% of whom are unemployed. These are really the poorest of the poor who have to come up with new survival strategies to navigate this inflation. So it used to be like, you know, a middle-class Zimbabwean person could afford meat and a bottle of Coke every day. But these are now luxuries. And so what it's done is really pushed members outside of Zimbabwe. There are at least 3 million Zimbabweans who fled the country more permanently as what are sometimes called economic refugees, and they're trying to find jobs elsewhere. In addition, a lot of people are depending on remittances and kind of going across the border to buy basic food commodities. So if you go to border towns, you see thousands of people loaded up with bags of cornmeal and cooking oil, people just loading down minibus taxis to take this food back to their families because you can't find it on the shelves in Zimbabwe.
Gretchen Wilson in Johannesburg, South Africa, telling us about conditions on the ground in Zimbabwe. Gretchen, thanks for your time.
Thank you very much, Kai.
As Gretchen just told us, refugees flee Zimbabwe by the thousands every month. Most of them settle in South Africa or Botswana. As many as 1 million have made it to the United Kingdom. A bit more than 100,000 live here. No matter where they wind up, though, Zimbabwean expats try to find ways to help feed their relatives at home, relying on some high-tech help. Marketplace's Jennifer Collins has that part of the story.
Zodwa Wende moved from Zimbabwe to California 8 years ago. As soon as she landed, Wende began sending money to her family in Africa. But back home, inflation is out of control. A loaf of bread that used to cost her family a few Zimbabwean dollars now can cost more than $100,000. If Wende wires cash, the money can become worthless overnight.
With the situation back home, like sending money, people complain the money's not enough. And I think I was talking to one of my friends and they told me that you can buy groceries online.
That's how Wende discovered Sadza.com. The website allows Zimbabweans in America to order groceries online and send them to their families back home. Here's how it works. Whenever Wende wants to buy food for her family, she scrolls through Sadza's site.
It seems that they have 100 kgs of rice for $93.
100 kilograms is about 220 pounds. Wende doesn't take long to decide.
So we click on that package.
With a click and a credit card, Zodwa Wende places her order. Sadza's owner takes over from there.
I would get an email, and that email is what I would forward to provide the food.
That's Anesu Manjengwa. In the 8 years he's been running Sadza.com, he's developed a list of trusted contacts in Zimbabwe. Manjengwa forwards the orders to them. They buy the rice and deliver it, usually the next morning. Whenever they can, his contacts buy food outside Zimbabwe where costs are more reasonable. That helps because Manjengwa promises his customers that he won't change his prices in the course of a deal.
If you want to guarantee that your family has something to eat, it's better to send the food than to send money.
Manjengwa's idea has caught on. As many as 30,000 people use sites like his. And it's not just food. People can send anything from generators to payment for doctor's visits. Some websites are less reliable than others. But Wende says Sadza has always delivered for her.
When you talk to people, they really don't have food. They're like really struggling. Like, we don't know where the next meal is going to come from. So you can imagine you send them 100 kgs of rice. That's really a lot.
That bag of rice will support her family for a month, maybe longer. In Los Angeles, I'm Jennifer Collins for Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, recognizing the value of a well-diversified college savings plan. Putnam Investments, a prudent approach to investing. Additional support from the University of Southern California's Marshall School of Business.
These final notes before we let you go today. Back in the 1980s, Nintendo made history when it catapulted gaming consoles into the mainstream. 17 years later, the company is on top once again. Sales of the Nintendo Wii have officially overtaken those of Microsoft's Xbox. Nintendo now has a hair more than 41.5% of the market. Microsoft's at 41.4%. I told you it was just a hair. Sony's PlayStation 3, by the way, not even close, 17% there. Another battle could be brewing, too. This one's to save the world, and it's being helped along by Google. The company's philanthropy, Google.org, has made a request. It's looking for proposals from any individual or company for an innovative solution to curb global warming. The company says it could include anything from an electric vehicle to a new kind of power grid. In it for the lucky winner, and I knew you were waiting for the payoff here, Google.org will give them up to $10 million. And that is Marketplace from American Public Media. Today, the Dow lost 16 points, a 10th percent. The NASDAQ dropped 5 points, 0.2%. The S&P 500 up just a touch. We'll call it flat. All of it, though, it could have been worse with oil at a record high and the dollar at record lows. Robbie Carman, Stephen Colon, Nicole Imbornone, Eric Johnson, and Aaron Scott are our engineers. Next time on the program, an oil worker's family struggles to keep the home fires burning.
He comes home. And then I have to accept him, and he has to accept me, and everything is jungled up, and then the cycle starts all over again.
I'm Kai Rizdal. Hope you can join us for that tomorrow.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.